I grew up on the farm in Galesburg, and so that's where I started riding a bike. I would ride, I'd just be bored out of my mind riding a bicycle, little banana sweet Schwinn, and just riding it all around the farm, riding around the dirt trails and nearly getting hit by farm trucks and machinery and stuff like that. And it's just, I don't know, I did that a lot, but I never, my mom wouldn't let me ride in the road because we lived in the rural area. But eventually when I was like in that age where you want a car, but you can't have a car, I started riding out to Galesburg or down the road. I went as far as the old movie theater that was by the airport, and that was my last long distance riding until 2011.
That's a bit of a gap there. So,
yeah, there's a gap. I rode bicycles around as a student at Western and stuff like that, but it wasn't a thing where this is what I like to do every day and I want to do it in the extreme manner. It was just a thing. You rode a bike.
Yeah.
When you didn't have a car.
Do you do it every day now, more or less?
Not in the winter, not when it's below 40, but but I, whenever I have to leave the house, I work out of my home, so as a writer. Mm-hmm. So whenever I have to leave the house, I do ride, unless it's, you know, time constraint or just bad weather.
Yeah.
Or I don't want to end up sweaty at my destination.
That's true, too. So, if you're going for some kind of a interview for your articles or whatever, you don't want to be scary when you walk in. Well, that was the one thing that struck me. I think the impression I'm walking away with after reading Mule Skinner Blues, mud. Lots of mud.
Yeah. That was a canal trail. The first part of the ride on the Great Allegheny Passage from Pittsburgh to Cumberland, that's a regular rail trail. That's a little gritty, but it's not muddy. It's designed for bikes, basically. It's like the Calhaven Trail. If anybody out there has been on the Calhaven Trail, it's not smooth, but it's nice enough. It's solid. But
it's a trail made for bikers and walkers?
Yeah, it's a rail trail. It's what they do when they convert an old train bed, an old railroad bed to being a trail for bikers and walkers.
And this is from Pittsburgh to Washington, D.C.
Yeah, the first part's from Pittsburgh to Washington, D.C. to Cumberland. And then Cumberland to Washington, D.C. is the muddy part. It's the canal towpath, which I think, if I want to talk about my own book in a most objective way as possible, I think that the second part is more interesting because it just gets a little weird. It gets a little, not weird, but you really feel like you're in a different part of the country.
Well, your photographs are gorgeous. You have color photos in here, and they just drew me in where I would just have to stare at the photos for a while, and it's like, ooh, I'd like to see this. Thanks. Both the history and just this dreamy, woodsy look, you know, the kind you have on those posters in your office, the remember nature.
Yeah, it gets very dreamy. It gets very, very dreamy, especially when you're riding like 50 miles a day and you're going slightly uphill.
It's dreamier on a poster than in reality.
It is a sort of mental state where I try to explain it in the book that I feel like I'm doomed, like I'm never going to get there. I'm never going to get to that comfy motel, and it might be slightly rainy, or I might be covered in mud, and then I'll round a corner, and it's like, oh my gosh, look at this scene that I'm in front of. And because I've exerted myself, because I've put myself into a state of mind where I'm just exhausted and in the middle of nowhere, and I've seen no people, and I've heard no news. I've seen no Facebook. I'm in the middle of the woods, and you turn a corner, and there's this river, and it's the rapids. And I know from historical signs that I saw on the way that George Washington tried to get up these rapids. And you just feel like you've gone back into another time, another place, and
these ghosts are spirits of our history. Yeah.
Yes, I was riding with George Washington for a bit there.
Yeah. Did you read about history before, or you already knew it, or you just went by the plaques along the way?
I knew a lot of I kind of was in college. I kind of was on the verge of minoring in history before I minored in journalism. So I'm not an expert, but I'm kind of influenced by Sarah Vowell, too, that her personal takes on history and going to see various historical sites. But yeah, I saw a lot of the plaques, and I kind of flashed back to the French and Indian War, which I never really understood, and did some further research in the motel rooms where I'm sitting there, recuperating, eating pizza, and just learning that, George Washington, Colonel George Washington might have accidentally triggered some part of this by maybe on purpose. Killing this French dude who was, you know, there's a little scuffle, and it's just fascinating to me. I mean, growing up in Southwest Michigan, our history goes back to maybe, I don't know, Titus Bronson and stuff like that. But it's nothing too exciting, really.
So what inspired you to make this journey?
It's something I've been doing pretty much every year since 2012. I started writing.
A yearly journey that you do?
Pretty much. I skipped 2013. I went with some friends on 2013. That wasn't a very long ride. But 2012, I told my wife I was going to ride from Kalamazoo to Cadillac and back. And she said no. And I said, why not? And she said, oh, it's because you don't know how to change. If you got a flat, you don't know how to change an inner tube. You don't know how to fix that. And she was right. And so I learned how to fix a flat, and I happened to get a flat. I fixed it by myself on the road, and I felt really empowered. Just like,
yeah.
I can be on this bicycle as, you know, the most vulnerable thing on the road, but I can do this. And you don't feel vulnerable. You feel free when you're doing this.
Yeah.
It's a slow ride, but you can go anywhere.
Well, there was something in the book that you wrote, I think towards the end of it, anybody can get on a bike, that you weren't some athlete, you know, when you first decided to start riding again since childhood. You just kind of little by little, and lo and behold, you've traveled some distance.
It's amazing that it was 2011. I felt a little bit overweight, and I realized every time I walked up the stairs, I run out of breath, and I thought about the incidents of heart failure and heart attacks in my family and strokes and things like that. And I thought, well, maybe I should do something about that. So I started riding the bike, and I discovered the trails around Kalamazoo and Portage, and I discovered I could ride my bike all the way to Lake Michigan if I wanted to. So I did that. And once I did that, I thought I could ride to Lake Michigan and back without having somebody pick me up and drive me back. And that was like 88 miles. I did 88 miles that fall.
Yeah.
Which nearly killed me, but, you know.
That's not bad.
It made me realize I could go some distance.
There seemed to be another motive here, because this is as the current administration came into power. You kind of wanted to do some flipping off there once you got to your destination.
Can we say that on the radio? On WMUK, I wanted to do some flipping off. Yes, I wanted to do some flipping off. I decided to do this ride before the election. And I thought that, you know, I just assumed, like anybody, that the normal candidate would be in the office and be our first woman president. But it'd be like same old, pretty much. And then the incident happened I call him then President Trump in the book because I think that in the near future, people are going to read this and they'll think, whoa, this is that weird time in our history that's once in a million years in America where this, I don't want to rant on the air. Anyway, I let my opinions be known in the book. And
yeah, you do.
And contrasted with the history of this country, the fact that this guy is in the White House, it bugs me. It really bugs me. I flash back to Nixon, because Nixon was the first president I remember, and I remember growing up.
Yeah, you make the comparisons in a few places here between today and back then, and today lost.
Yeah, I don't know. We still have to play this chapter out.
Yeah.
I stayed at the Watergate Hotel because it was just something I wanted to do. I think I explain it in the book. But
yeah,
it cost a lot of money to stay at the Watergate Hotel, but it was kind of worth it to wake up in the morning at the Watergate and get on my bike and ride to the White House. And as you said, I wanted to do some flipping off, but I didn't really make a scene. I don't want to spoil. It's a spoiler alert. I just dropped mud from my bike onto the little area.
And there's
in front
a photo
of
there too.
Yeah. It was just, oh, how can I explain it without? Well, it's not a controversial thing to say that this man is not fit to be president. And I don't think, one of the things in my mind that I really suspect is he doesn't really understand what's valuable about this country. I dropped this dirt off because, you know, it's just dirt. I wrote something like, it's just dirt for Trump. It's just dirt for Donald. But this is from this canal towpath, one of the first major infrastructure projects, one of the first transportation projects in the country, where mules towed boats up and down this canal. And this is where George Washington wanted this canal built. And it's just, I don't know. I don't think I'm reaching Donald with this book or more my actions of dropping dirt in front of the White House, but we got to do what we got to do, I guess.
Cathartic, maybe.
It's cathartic, yeah.
So there's this contrast between some of the places you stay, and like you said, the Watergate at the end, this fancy schmancy place meant for executives, and you have your tie with you.
I brought my tie. Yeah.
But I love this place that you stay earlier in your journey, Steve's little B&B. Tell us about Steve.
Bless his heart, Steve. I tried to find this. This is an area of the country, area of the trail, in that panhandle of Maryland, where it's just like the UP. I've ridden my bike through the UP, and it's just like the UP, where you can just go for hours and not see anybody. Very few people. If there's a town, it's just little crossroads. So I was trying to find the perfect spot where I didn't have to ride too far. In my planning, I found this Steve's Little Orleans Lodge. It's in a little town called Little Orleans, Maryland. And Steve is an 80-year-old Korean War vet who set up his own bed and breakfast in his house. And his house was a one-room schoolhouse that he built onto sometime earlier. I don't know how long he's been running this place. I don't think it was too long, maybe 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But he built on this little wing, and there's like three rooms. And I don't know if Steve knows what he's doing or not, but he's just doing it. He's just doing it. It was cheap. It was like $60. And I don't know if I can even explain. It was like being at Grandpa's house, but he's not your grandpa.
Yeah, yeah.
He had a weird sense of humor. He had a weird sense of housekeeping. I read Yelp reviews of this place, and a lot of bicyclists liked it, but they also mentioned it wasn't very tidy. It's not fancy.
Yeah.
Some people were upset that the kitchen was a mess because one of his deals is he'll make you French toast in the morning, which I avoided.
There's this moment where he says, oh, you know, because you can't seem to get through all the stuff around there, and there's a dog. He's just roll on over him.
Yeah, just he told me, I bring my bike. He has me hose my bike off, which is a good idea because it's covered in filth.
Yeah.
And then he tells me, just park it by the refrigerator in the kitchen. That'll be the best place for it. And it's like, okay. And he's like, just there's a dog there. And he's like, just roll over the dog. She won't mind. And it's that kind of a place where it's one of the things you get when you do these rides is you'll run into people or motels or bed and breakfasts, and some people might not be comfortable with that. They might not want to, you know, be in a bed and breakfast where suddenly the radio starts blaring maudlin hits of the 70s and at like 2 in the morning, which I don't know why that happened, but that happened at Steve's. It just became, it's a very surreal experience.
And then, like we said, there's the Watergate. And even in just reading it, it was jarring to be reading about this beautiful nature trail. And then at the end, how you pedal into this big city.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like for you? Was it like a culture shock after all that time out there?
It was. I grew up in a small town. I lived in Kalamazoo, but I'm no slouch and as far as metro living. I've gone to New Orleans a lot, and I've seen the big city. I've been to Washington, D.C. as a child with my parents, but it was amazing that on the trail led to another trail, and I rounded a corner. On one side of me is the Potomac, around the corner, and there's the Washington Monument on the horizon. And I go about half a mile later, I'm on a street, there's cars. That was a culture shock. It's a shock whenever you're on a bike and there's traffic all around you. It's a shock. It's a little nerve-wracking. But then I get to where the Watergate is, and I was trying to find the door to the hotel. And the Watergate Hotel is part of a big complex. If people know, there's the condos and there's the office buildings where the famous Nixon break-in happened. And I get to one door that looked like a entrance to a hotel, and I leaned my filthy bike against the planter, the big planter outside, and I'm filthy, and I have this bowling shirt on because that's my uniform as far as bike riding goes. And the doorman comes out, and he just starts yelling at me, like, "You get up!" I don't want to say what he said, but he's just yelling at me, "Get that bike off that planter."
Yeah.
And he's just treating me like a crusty bike hobo, which I probably looked like and basically was.
Yeah.
But I tell to him that, well, I've got a reservation here under Waddell, and you should look it up. And he's like, "The hotel's that way." He yells, points down the road. So I go to the hotel, and it was, I get into a theme which I start thinking about as I run into people in Washington, D.C., all the people who work there. They all seem to have foreign accents. They all seem to be elsewhere. Not the guy who yelled at me, not that doorman.
Yeah.
But everybody else. And they were all so nice to me. They were all so courteous, and they looked at me as my filthy self on my filthy bike, and they're like, "Oh, yes, Mr. Waddell, come right here, sir." And I tell them that I'd ridden all the way from Pittsburgh, and instead of treating me like some crazed weirdo, they're like, "Oh, my goodness, here's a water." They give me Watergate-branded water, which that's kind of the place Watergate is. They have water labels on their water. It's Watergate brand water.
Yeah.
So it was, and that led me into thinking about our current president, that these people from other countries, they're working their butts off. Can I say butts here? They're working their butts off in the service industry. And they're also kind, and they're also generous. There's a last photo that in the book, I don't know if you remember it, that after going to the White House, I go back to the Watergate, and I got to get ready because my wife's coming to town and I got to meet her. And I wanted to get a brush or something to brush off the dirt and filth off of my bike. Go to this little gas station that's right by the Watergate that I was at the day before. Everybody in there is from another country. And I go in there, and I'm like, is there a brush I can buy? I need to clean off my filthy bike. Is there a rag? They give me a rag, and it's like, okay, I can use this.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guy who I think is in charge, because he wasn't wearing overalls, he comes out, and he's like, "I've got a hose over here. Come back. I've got a hose." And I think he's from somewhere in Central or South America. He has an accent. And he hoses off my bike. I'm standing there watching this guy who's in a polo shirt. He's pretty well dressed. He's for a guy who runs a gas station. And he's hosing off my bike, and he's like, "There you go, my man." And he gives me a little soul handshake. And I think about that the next morning as I write on Facebook, in my Facebook post, that, you know, these are people in this town of Washington, D.C. who've come from elsewhere. They're so nice. They're so gracious. They're They look at me not like I'm some filthy bike hobo. And then we got a guy in the White House who wants to restrict these people. He wants to kick a lot of them out. Yeah. And I think at some point, I think one of my people were just like that. They were talking with a weird accent and looked at oddly by some, but they made their way, and here I am, and here we are.
Yeah.
What more can I say about that?
Well, let's wind it up probably where we should have begun, with the title, Mule Skinner mm-hmm. Blues. Explain what a mule skinner is.
Well, it comes from it doesn't come from the old song, but by the Fendermen, the Mule Skinner Blues by the Fendermen. A mule skinner was basically any guy who worked with the mules on this mule towpath or any other profession, I think. My grandfather, Harley Waddell, who started Waddell's Nursery, Harley Waddell was a mule skinner. After his mother died from the Spanish flu, he went out west and worked as a mule skinner, which basically meant he led the mules as they carried supplies back and forth on road projects that he worked on out west. And mule skinners here in the canal, the C&O Canal, the mules would tow barges up and down the canal on this canal towpath. Mm-hmm. I'm riding on the canal towpath that the mules worked and the mule skinners worked. And a few trips ago, I started calling my loaded down bicycle old Betsy. She's a good old mule. And it just kind of came together because it's just, when you're loaded down with about, I don't know how many pounds of clothes and bourbon and I don't know what I carried, Lara bars and cyclist nutritional boosters and energy things, and you feel like you're a mule. You're riding your mule, and you are the mule. You're yeah. working your legs, and you just get into this weird pace. Not like the cyclists that you might think of in their Lycra and their skin-tight clothes, but you're more of a mule. You're just steadily going forward. And so that's why it's Mule Skinner Blues.
Where's your next journey taking you?
I'm going to ride from St. Ignace to Copper Harbor this summer.
Neat. Oh, that'll be
so
beautiful.
I'm going to leave late June, get there by the 4th of July, meet some friends, my wife. We're going to have a cabin. I'm going to rest and then go back. So.
Oh, that'll be a beautiful journey. Well, thank you for stopping by, Mark.
Well, thanks, Azienta.